Welcome to the Impact Equals podcast, in which we explore the impact investment industry, what it is, why it matters, and how it is playing a key role in reshaping how business is undertaken in many parts of the world. My name is Andrew Murray Watson. My guest today, Jessica Espinoza, is the Chief Executive Officer at 2X Global. If listeners already work in gender finance or impact investment, they will know about 2X Global, an organization which is making incredible waves in the field of gender lens investing. But Jessica, if I could just start, firstly saying welcome to the podcast, and also just ask, in your own words, what is 2X Global all about?
Thank you, Andrew. I'm delighted to be here. So 2X Global is a membership network for investors, and it's also a field-building organization. So it's really a global industry body for gender finance. And our purpose at 2X Global is to unlock gender-smart capital at scale. We aim to create system-level change and work across essentially three strategy pillars. The first one is to build investor capacity. The second is to advance standard. And the third, to shift markets. And we believe that these are really the key levers to system-level change. Our first pillar, to build investor capacity, comprises our communities of practice, where we engage with our members on peer learning and capacity building, on key themes like the nexus of gender and climate finance, the care economy, broader justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, and other priority themes like digital and financial inclusion. This is also where investment practitioners collaborate to share a pipeline and co-invest. So there's a lot going on in terms of peer learning and collaboration. And then the second pillar, to advance and align standards, is all about the 2X criteria, which have quickly become a global industry standard for gender lens investing. With so many actors who are today using the 2X criteria all around the world, we have also seen great interest in a certification mechanism around them. And so over the last several months, we at 2X Global have been engaging with a diverse set of stakeholders to develop a 2X certification mechanism and take our standard setting work to the next level. And then finally, under the third pillar, to shift and shape markets, we have several exciting initiatives in the innovation space and really to unlock more capital in more creative ways. One of our flagship initiatives under that pillar is the 2X Challenge that I'm sure many have heard of, which has raised over $27 billion of gender lens investments since it was first launched at the G7 summit in 2018.
Thank you. I think you just touched upon it there. So how did 2X come about in the first place? It was an initiative between the development finance institutions of the G7 nations. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So we started with a collective capital commitment back in 2018 at the G7 summit, which was initially the DFIs of the G7 countries coming together and making a collective commitment to invest and mobilize at least $3 billion until the end of 2020, so over a three-year period. And at the time, it was unprecedented. It was perceived as very ambitious. And there also wasn't a standard in the market at that time.
But you smashed it, didn't you? It was massively over $3 billion in the end.
Yes, correct. So in the last 2 years, in the last challenge from 2021 to 2022, we collectively invested over $16 billion additionally. And so that now brings the total to over $27
billion. So just break it down for us how it works in practical terms. You go into presumably a fund manager or some sort of institutional investor. And what's the conversation like? They're interested in gender lens investing. What's the sort of the process that goes on?
Yeah, so perhaps it's worth starting with how we define gender smart investing and also how we engage with investees on that.
Please.
So gender smart investing integrates gender analysis into financial analysis for better outcomes. That's kind of essentially how it can be defined. And we at 2X Global define gender smart investing based on the 2X criteria framework that I just mentioned. So the 2X criteria focus on opportunities along the full business value chain. And that's also how we would engage with a fund manager or a company, for example, who's interested in gender smart investing. The first criterion focuses on entrepreneurship, so companies founded and owned by women. The second on leadership, focusing on the share of women in senior management and on the board of directors or the investment committee in the case of funds. The third one, quality employment, focusing on the share of women in the workforce and workplace policies and practices that promote gender equality. We also focus on supply chain with our updated 2X criteria. We have brought that out more clearly as a separate criterion. So looking at for example, procurement from women-run businesses and engagement with supply chain companies on gender. And then finally, products and services that are designed with a gender lens and enhance the well-being of women and girls or promote their economic empowerment. So it really shows the opportunity along the full business value chain. And so to your question, when we engage, for example, with a fund, we would look at those criteria at the level of the fund manager itself. So for example, the share of women on DIC, the fund's investment processes and how gender is embedded, as well as at the portfolio level. So looking at opportunities for that fund manager to work with portfolio companies along all of the criteria and, for instance, agree on gender action plans or value creation plans of the delta and the impact that they want to generate over the holding period.
And how did you personally get into the industry? Was it something you were always interested in, or how did you get involved?
So I started my career in financial inclusion, first in microfinance and then in SME banking. And from the early days of my career, I had always been interested in creating impact through business and entrepreneurship. One of the highlights of my early career journey was becoming a member of the management board of an SME bank in Latin America. And that's when I realized how much influence lies not necessarily with the management, but really with the investors. So I became really interested in this question of how investors can leverage their influence to create impact at an even greater scale. For me personally, gender equality had always been one of my most kind of priority impact themes. And so I saw an amazing opportunity to bring all of this together. So how can we work with finance and business to promote gender equality through impact investing?
Okay, I guess we should ask the fundamental question. Why is gender lens investment so important?
So I think there are a number of different ways to look at this. One is from an impact perspective, and the other one is kind of from a business imperative perspective. The business imperative for gender equality and broader diversity and inclusion today is very evident. There's a huge business case for incorporating a gender lens into business. And we see, for example, that by ignoring gender in investment decision-making or also in private businesses, that there's a lost opportunity, that we're leaving money on the table. On the other hand, there's also a very strong imperative when it comes to the impact case. So we know that SDG 5, for example, is not only an extremely important goal in and of itself, but it's also a catalyst for all of the other SDG and impact outcomes. And so especially in emerging markets, if we really want to move the needle and generate positive impact, it's fundamental to also look at those investments from a gender lens. And so we see, for example, really interesting models where gender is front and center. It's really the main purpose of the investments. But we also see a lot of opportunities where, say, the investor perhaps cares predominantly about climate outcomes or other SDGs like health and education. And there again, we see a lot of opportunities at this nexus of gender and those other impact goals to move the needle on those as well. And so it's also an enabler and a catalyst.
Just building what you just said, can you give us one really good sort of example of what you just talked about in terms of like maybe a case study or a particular investment that really stands out for you?
One of my favorite examples is Horizon Capital, their fourth fund. And Horizon Capital, as you may know, is a women-led private equity fund in Ukraine. And they were awarded flagship fund status relatively recently in the middle of the current war situation. And what I find really exciting about this example is it was an opportunity for the DFIs to come together and back a very successful women-led fund, but also to be really creative in how we were looking at what's the impact we can make, and especially in the current environment, and how can we collaborate together with this fund manager to see how they can work with their portfolio companies along the entire investment cycle to make an impact from a gender perspective. They invest in companies that are that have a strong tech focus, primarily in Ukraine and in Moldova. And so it was also an exciting opportunity to see, okay, how do you apply the 2X criteria in that local context? What does it mean in the tech sector and in the innovation space? and then to collectively agree of what we think is realistic for the fund to achieve at different stages along the life cycle all the way to exit.
I mean, it's an incredibly unique situation, isn't it? I mean, being in Ukraine and given the current situation there, I mean, it must have been an extraordinarily challenging development, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think what's remarkable was really the fundraising success as well, right? Because it was the DFIs coming together, achieving a first close just a few months after Russia started the invasion. And then about a year ago, I think it was in April 2023, there was the second closing with so many more investors coming on board and a really, you know, I think they were closing at 250 million. So it was just impressive how much capital was flowing into the fund at this time, especially. And I think there was just a lot of excitement also about the flagship fund status and the impact that we could collectively have.
So does investing in women produce better financial returns? Is that a sort of a data set that you guys can point to?
Yeah, they're really interesting business case statistics. And if you look at, you know, kind of the data that's out there from, say, you know, McKinsey, Credit Suisse, and the collection of macro level data, we see that companies that have more women in decision-making roles outperform other companies on essentially all financial metrics. So there's a lot of really great data out there. But we also see it when we look, for example, at our own investments and research. And for instance, this well-known IFC Oliver Wyman study that you may be familiar with that shows that, for instance, private equity funds that have women in or gender-balanced leadership teams make a 20% higher net IRR than fund managers that are, you know, male-dominated.
Why do you think that is the case? Is it just sort of a blend of perspectives and experiences? Or why do you think that kind of that a gender balance board just does better?
I think in general, diversity of perspectives leads to better outcomes. It leads to better governance. You know, I think it also, what we see a lot and hear a lot is that it's sometimes hard for investors to really identify with opportunities in the markets if they are very far away from their own lived experience. And, you know, we see it, for example, in sectors like, say, women's health, right, that it's very hard sometimes for male investors to actually judge the market potential of a solution or an innovation because it's so far away from their experience. And similarly, we see this often that in decision-making bodies, if you have both men and women represented, you have that bigger picture, you know, a more complete picture of the opportunities. The same is true, for example, for other types of representation. So also if you think about racial equity, representation of people who are from the markets where we're investing in and who bring a different perspective.
Interesting. It's somewhat surprising to me that the rest of the world hasn't woken up to that reality. You would think that boards and companies and investors would be rushing headlong to have a balanced makeup of senior management.
Yeah, and I think we do see a lot of momentum and we do see the change happening. You know, if I look, for example, at 2X Global, we started the year 2022 with 20 development finance institutions and multilateral development banks. And today we have over 150 member institutions across the spectrum of investors. So every day we see new actors coming in who are really interested in gender smart investing and who also look at themselves, you know, and want to set target and want to be part of the change. I think it's often more of a question of how do you actually do it? I think many understand the why, but it's still a big step from the why to the how.
Yeah. And talking specifically about investing in emerging economies, I mean, it's obviously a very different situation to investing in developed markets, right?
I think it depends. Of course, it's a very different investment context.
Yeah.
But when you look at gender in particular, we recently did this analysis because we, as you may know, we have been in the process of updating the 2X criteria. And in particular, there was interest in looking at our thresholds and seeing if they should be more context specific. So there was, for example, this question, should they be different for developed markets and for emerging markets? But when we look at the underlying benchmarking data, we actually see that it's not so much developed markets or emerging markets. It's not necessarily based on income level. It's also other factors. And so we ultimately opted for thresholds at the intersection of country and sector. So when it comes to gender equality, you know, it's a global issue and it looks quite differently even across developed markets or across emerging markets. But of course, when you think about investments more broadly, there are big differences, right? Like it's a whole different risk profile. It's also different opportunities and other barriers that may play into this. So that's definitely something to take into account.
Can you invest in inclusive outcomes without being a gender smart investor?
I would argue that you can't. I think, so for me personally, it's not only, you know, if you want to have inclusive outcomes, I think that's definitely the case. But I would even go one step further and say any future-proof business model needs to incorporate a gender lens to be successful going forward. And so definitely, if you're interested in inclusive outcomes, I think it's so imperative that you have a gender lens, because it's not only, you know, the business case and the resilience case, but it's also really an enabler for all-inclusive outcomes more broadly beyond gender.
So if you're, you know, DFI or an impact investor, what sort of percentage of your investment should be made through a kind of a gender lens? I mean, is the answer 100% or?
I would say it depends where your starting point is, right? Because they're such different actors. I would say the aspiration should be that in 100% of your investments, gender is at least mainstreamed, you know, so you're at least adopting the 2X criteria and looking at your investments from that perspective, and then a subset can have a higher ambition. Of course, if you have a huge portfolio, you may not be able to reach 100% overnight. And even when you look at the new business, if you have a lot of new business that you do every year, it might be unrealistic to expect that 100%, you know, immediately has a gender lens or meets the criteria. But I think you can look at your own situation and then set targets over time. So what we see often is that perhaps it starts with, you know, 30% of new business. And then in the subsequent years, it goes higher with the end goal of reaching 100%. But of course, it's a journey.
And how do you avoid it becoming a box ticking exercise, for want of a better expression?
That's something that we've been hearing more concerns about more recently. I think in the early days, when we started applying the 2X criteria under the 2X challenge, we had not only the criteria, but also a set of principles. So it was a lot about intentionality, the spirit of the criteria, and really having a more holistic look at an investment beyond ticking the box. But what's the intentionality behind it? Also, for example, how are we really embedding gender along the investment cycle? Because I think if you're only using this as a screening tool at origination or due diligence, you're missing the bigger picture, right? Then it just becomes a checklist. Whereas if you think about the whole investment cycle and you look at origination, due diligence, then how you make the investment decision, you look at your value creation plans and how you can embed the 2X criteria, and then all the way to responsible exits, it's a whole different story and it becomes meaningful. So what we have done over the last year in our co-creation process around 2X certification is to codify a lot of the good practice. So for example, we have a new addition to the 2X criteria called governance and accountability, which essentially codifies this idea of intentionality. So it looks at strategic action and management systems at the company level, for example, to say, okay, great, you meet the 2X criteria. You have, for example, you meet the threshold for women in leadership. But what's the bigger intentionality? How are you looking at strategic action, at management systems, and what else is there? And I think that's a really great development that there's now so much more interest in, you know, more interest in this. And I think it's also because we have so many actors adopting the 2X criteria that it becomes a way to differentiate yourself and, you know, show that it's more than just ticking boxes.
Sure. So do you go back and mark your partner's homework after a period of time to check out how they're doing?
There's definitely this accountability mechanism in the 2X challenge that has always existed, where we have kind of a peer review process. So we look at each other's investments and, you know, challenge one another and also make suggestions about how to make this more meaningful and align, especially on co-investments. But with certification, we will also add this additional independent aspects of third-party verification, where we see a lot of demand.
I think you mentioned briefly earlier that there's an interesting nexus between gender lens investing and the fight against climate change. Can you just go into a little bit of detail about why that is?
Yeah, that's a really interesting nexus and something that our members have done a lot of work on and where we've also seen many more investments in recent years. So it's essentially the recognition that women and girls are not only disproportionately affected by climate change, and therefore their needs need to be taken into account if we want to think about effective climate solutions, but also that we see that in many countries, they are actually the agents of change who at the front lines are driving climate action. And what we've been doing, for example, for the last couple of years is really ensure that women have a seat at climate negotiations, a seat, you know, at the COP table, that they are visible and that their voices are heard in the design of solutions. And they're really interesting initiatives. In particular, we see an amazing example of women entrepreneurs in Africa who come up with very innovative climate solutions that can be scaled, and where you see this nexus between climate and gender. But it's also beyond women entrepreneurs. We have, for example, developed together with BII a Gender Smart Climate Finance Toolkit that was launched at COP, where we look at 12 different sectors. So it's, you know, it's really in any sector where climate is relevant, there are meaningful ways to also incorporate a gender lens and thereby not only achieve also gender outcomes, but also stronger climate outcomes.
Can we just talk briefly about gender smart investment and how you sort of see it fitting into the broader impact investment landscape?
Yes, I think that's a really interesting question, because for me, gender fits squarely into impact investing. So, you know, as I mentioned before, I think any credible impact investing strategy should have a gender lens, no matter what your impact goal focus is. But I also think that gender smart investing is actually bigger and broader than impact investing. And that's because we see a lot of interest, not only from impact investors, but also increasingly from purely commercial investors who wouldn't consider themselves to be impact investors, but who come at it from a diversity and inclusion perspective, and who also recognize that we can't be ignoring 50% of the population in our investment decision making. And so it's interesting to see these two different, you know, kind of groups or different types of investors who either identify as impact or also who identify as purely commercial, but are still interested in this. And so I think there's actually a huge global opportunity to bring different capital providers together in gender smart investing. And maybe it could even be an opportunity for us to bring the purely commercial investors more into the impact investing space and kind of closing that divide.
They suddenly find themselves impact investors without starting off with that intention. Well, it sounds like the business case is pretty sound, certainly. We were asking all our guests on this podcast series the same question about what are the three most important trends that will be featured in the impact investment industry over this year and over the medium term?
So, okay, three key trends. I would say the first one is around more fit for purpose capital. We see more financial innovation, for example, beyond traditional private debt, private equity, such as revenue-based finance, for instance. They're really interesting models that we're now seeing in many local markets. The second one I would say is greater impact incentives. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening around impact-linked finance, for example. And we are now having conversations with some leaders in the impact-linked finance space to see how we might leverage 2X certification to, you know, kind of verify the KPIs that then enable premium payment for demonstrated impact. And similarly, we see in the fund space also a lot more conversation and action around carried interest linked to gender outcomes. So for example, using the 2X criteria to define asset under management that meet the 2X criteria, and then having incentive structures where carry is linked to those gender outcomes. And then the third one, I would say, are more innovative blended finance structures where we bring together different capital providers. And what I think is interesting about that in particular is we know that there's only so much philanthropic capital or development aid available. And so how can we be smarter in bringing that capital together with other types of capital to crowd in more private investors, for example, more private capital, and bring along others who would otherwise not invest in these impactful opportunities. But by having that blended finance approach, we can make the capital pool bigger and bring others along. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
That's great. Thank you. Jessica, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really interesting hearing your insights into Gender Lens Investment and the incredible work of 2X. And to our listeners, thank you very much for tuning in again. My name is Andrew Murray-Watson.